भक्तान् परवक्ष्यामि धर्मादिश्रय आवहन् सवाय पुण्यतमो देशा सत्पात्रं यत्र लभ्यते बिम्बं भगवतो यत्र सर्वं एताच्चराचरम् यत्र भ्रमणाकुलं तपो विद्या दयान्वितम्. Narada Muni continued, "Now I shall describe the places where religious performances may be well executed. Any place where a Vaishnava is available is an excellent place for all auspicious activities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the support of this entire cosmic manifestation with all its moving and non-moving living entities. The temple where the deity of the Lord is installed is a most sacred place. Furthermore, places where learned Brahmins observe Vedic principles by means of austerity, education, and mercy are also most auspicious and sacred." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse it is indicated that a Vaishnav temple where the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is worshipped, and where Vaishnavas are engaged in the service of the Lord, is the best sacred place for performing any religious ceremonies. At the present day, especially in big cities, people live in small apartments and are not able to establish a deity or temple. Under the circumstances, therefore, the centers and temples being established by the expanding Krishna consciousness movement are the best sacred places for performing religious ceremonies. Although people in general are no longer interested in religious ceremonies or deity worship, the Krishna consciousness movement gives everyone the chance to advance in spiritual life by becoming Krishna conscious. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 6:14, which is entitled Ideal Family Life. At the beginning of this chapter, Maharaj Yudhisthira, that great and eldest son of Kunti, inquired from Sri Narada Muni how a person like himself, who is living with a family and home, could advance spiritually toward the perfection of Krishna consciousness. And Narada Muni explains in this chapter how those who are living in the household life can perfect their existence. There is no impediment in any situation of life we are in if we are sincere to accept the direction and guidance of the Lord and His representatives, the great souls. He explains by saying that we should understand that our bodies, our homes, our family members, all of our wealth, they are all the property of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is mine. And we should keep this consciousness always awake in our hearts by associating with great saintly persons. This is the most essential part of our spiritual development. Srila Rupa Goswami, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, explains 64 items by which, if we follow, we can make advancement in spiritual life. But he explains very emphatically that before one can properly practice any of these devotional items, the prerequisite is that we must associate with sincere devotees. Because the atmosphere around us so much influences the way we think and the way we live. So Narada Muni explains to Maharaj Yudhisthira that such sincere souls, even while living at home, should make their homes places of pilgrimage by inviting saintly people to come to speak about the goal of life. And we should serve them by offering them prasad, by offering them whatever hospitality we possibly could offer. Even if you are a very poor person, if you offer a straw sitting mat and a little water, that is perfectly sufficient, providing if it is offered with affection and respect. And one should go to those places where they could regularly hear the glories of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains that even 50 years ago in Bengal, when he was younger, he said in practically every village in Bengal, every evening when people would get off their work, the whole villages would sit together to hear Srimad Bhagavatam being recited. And in practically every home before people would take rest was the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, people understood that whatever their employment, whatever their occupation, it all has a spiritual purpose when it culminates in devotional service, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Narada Muni explains to Maharaj Yudhisthira that the wealth that we make through our occupation should not be used for our own selfish interests, but rather it should be used in the service of God and for the upliftment of human society. To the degree we try to preserve and accumulate more and more for ourselves, to that very same degree we become bound by the great, great burden of material attachment. It is described in Bhagavat that a man who is very wealthy, who has a very, very nice crown or a big, big turban bedecked with jewels, it only serves one to sink much faster and deeper if he is drowning in an ocean. So we are all drowning in this ocean of material existence. And the more we accumulate, the faster we go down into the waters, and the deeper and more hopeless we become. So there's nothing wrong with wealth, providing we know how to utilize it, so that it liberates us and doesn't create bondage. And that is when we utilize it for the purpose of God's service. By utilizing all the facilities that we have in our life, whether it be our homes, our automobiles, all of the other acquisitions we have gained, if they can be utilized to help elevate our family members and the people in general, if they can be utilized in the service of the Lord, then they have a spiritual value. But if they cannot, if they are simply being utilized for our selfish interests or the selfish interests of our family members, then those very things that we are so much working hard to achieve simply become a great burden of attachment in our hearts. And here in this particular verse, he is explaining, Sri Narada Muni, the places where religious performances are best executed. And the first statement he makes is wherever there are sincere Vaishnavas available, that is the most excellent place for all auspicious activities. Doesn't matter where we are. I know one godbrother, not one, two godbrothers, and they were very much frustrated with material life. They had quite high degrees in college. They were very much able to be very successful in the world if they so desired. In fact, one was a professor of college. But they wanted to find something of spiritual value in their lives. And they were living in New York City. And they were thinking the best place to find spiritual teachings is India. India is Dharma Bhumi, Punya Bhumi. People have always gone to India to find spiritual solutions to the problems of the world. It is the land of enlightenment. Of course, these days, the people of India are very much rejecting and becoming more forgetful of the real heritage of their culture. India is a completely and purely spiritual culture. But when it tries to chase after other cultures and imitate, it simply becomes a place of chaos and embarrassment. In fact, there was, at one time, just not long ago, the man who was considered to be the world's foremost scholar of world religions. He was a man from China, and he wrote a book about the religions of the world and spirituality. And the first chapter of the book, he says, if anyone wants to know about God, they must go to India. This is what he wrote. So these people, these two godbrothers of mine, they went all the way to India on a boat. Very rigorous journey. And when they reached there, they went to Haridwar and Rishikesh and Varanasi and all of the holy places. And they were looking for a guru. They were looking for someone to guide them and teach them. But they met so many sadhus and so many babas that did not satisfy their intelligent philosophical questions, nor did they appear to be really living according to a very high standard of spirituality. So they spent some year or so traveling all around India, and they were very dissatisfied. So they returned to New York City. And one day, one of them was walking down the street, and he saw Srila Prabhupada walking the other way. At that time, Srila Prabhupada was unknown. He had just gotten a little storefront days before. This was in 1966. So he ran across the street, and he saw that he's an Indian sadhu, because he was just in India. He could recognize. So he asked Srila Prabhupada, are you coming from India? And this man is a very big, tall, white complexion, blue-eyed person. And Srila Prabhupada responded to him, are you coming from India? And this person told me about 20 years later, he said, hey, I never understood why he asked me if I was coming from India. But I just figured it out. 20 years later, he figured it out. He said, because if I hadn't have come from India, I wouldn't know what sadhus look like, so I wouldn't know to ask him if he came from India. Obviously, he wasn't from India. So Srila Prabhupada said to our godbrother, his name is Hayagriva, he said, I am just starting to give classes from Bhagavad Gita. I would like to show you the place where I'm giving classes, and you can tell me if this is a good place. So he asked him to help him. And he went and he saw, oh, yes, Swamiji, this is very nice. And then he started coming, and then he started bringing all of his friends. And soon they all became devotees, and Hare Krishna movement began. in a wonderful way. Anyways, this person, he went all the way across the world to India, and he went to the holy places. He went to Varanasi, he went to Rishikesh, all these holy places. And then he came back to the most degraded, fallen, sinful city in the world, New York, the Lower East Side. Prostitutes roaming everywhere, drug addicts practically everywhere. People are just taking all, if they're not addicted to drugs, they're taking drugs. Alcohol is everywhere. Unfortunate souls. There's nothing spiritual about that place. But they found in this little tiny storefront in New York City, the holiest of all holy places. A place where they achieve more enlightenment than even the holiest places of India. Why? Because Srila Prabhupada was there. Where there is a great saintly person, all the holy places are contained within his lotus feet. And even if it is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, it is the symptom of the ignorance of Kali Yuga to go to holy places just to take baths and say, I have been, without meeting saintly persons in those places. Because it is the saintly persons that reveal the holy place to us. And saintly persons can reveal the holy place within our hearts wherever we meet them. Therefore, the most sacred and auspicious of all places is wherever the sincere and great Vaishnavas are hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Malati Devi, she is here tonight. She is a wonderful example of a person who found the ultimate shelter of God's grace in the most terrible place. She met Prabhupada in Haight Ashbury. I don't know if you're familiar with Haight Ashbury, but historically, it was the capital of the kingdom of the hippies of the 1960s. It was the holiest of all holy places for people who were seeking some alternative to the frustration of life through drugs, and sex, and all sorts of other divisive methods. So here, everyone around, taking all drugs, listening to all crazy, agitating forms of music. And in this little storefront, just a little place in the middle of this massive tens and thousands of people just looking for the most extreme forms of sense gratification. From all over the country, young people are coming for sinful life. And Srila Prabhupada was sitting there with his kartals, chanting Maha Mantra. And people were finding the ultimate spiritual solutions, the ultimate enlightenment there. And if you ask these people, would you like to go to Jerusalem? Would you like to go to Mecca? Would you like to go to Vrindavan, Ayodhya, Badrinath? They would say, no. We'll stay here at Haight Ashbury with Srila Prabhupada. Because this is where we're finding Krishna. This is where the Supreme Lord is revealing himself to us. There is a beautiful verse in Srimad Bhagavatam that wherever the devotees are, all the holy places reside. Because those devotees are always reminding us of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, he was living in Vrindavan, in the most holy place in Vrindavan. He was living in Sevakunj. Sevakunj is where Krishna performs his Rasalila with Sri Radharani and Gopis. It is the most confidential holy place. And the part of Sevakunj that he was living Was Radha Damodar temple? Where Rupa Goswami's samadhi was only seconds walk from his room where he was staying and cooking. And Jiva Goswami's deities of Sri Radha Damodar, he could see them from his very place where he would sit and translate his books. And everyone around was a devotee. Wonderful atmosphere, the purest atmosphere. Srila Prabhupada said there was one old lady. She was very, very old, very poor. She had nothing. She was a widow. She was just living somewhere, begging for food. But every single day, with great, great strenuous effort, she would take a bucket of water. She would go to Radha Damodar temple. She didn't even have her own bucket. She would just ask the pujari to give her a bucket. And she would go, and with great effort, she would go to Jamuna, the river, that holy river. And she would fill the bucket with the water from Jamuna, and she would bring it back and give it to the pujaris to bathe the deity. And Prabhupada said every day this lady would offer this service. She wouldn't even put it directly on the deity. She would just get the water to serve the Lord's servant, the pujari. And for a young person to carry water is an easy thing, but it took her a long, long time. She was straining and struggling to get this bucket every day to there. And she wouldn't let anyone help her. It was her service to the Lord's servants. And Srila Prabhupada said about this lady that all these big, big pundits in Vrindavan, he said, many of them have ego. They will have to take births again and again. But this lady, who knows whether she has any education, but because she's so sincerely performing this simple service every day, he said she will definitely go back home, back to Godhead, in this very life. That is Vrindavan. Those types of people surrounding him. And yet he left. He left to go to the Bowery, the lowest, most degraded and degenerated part of America, and Haight-Ashbury. But actually, he never left Vrindavan. He brought Vrindavan to every continent of the earth. Wherever he traveled, wherever he would preach, wherever he would lead kirtan, wherever he would perform his devotional service, would become the holiest of holy places. And through this, so many thousands, tens and thousands of people, their lives were enlightened with the shelter of Krishna. In fact, Krishna himself says, Tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta, that wherever my devotees are gathered together, my devotees, to chant my name, I am in that place. That is the spiritual world. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Sastra Koi, Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siri Hoi. That even a moment's association with those pure souls who are dedicated to the service of the Lord, a moment's association with such a sadhu can open the doors to the highest stages of liberation in our lives. When the Lord bestows his supreme blessing upon us, he gives us the association of his devotees. And Narada Muni explains that the Supreme Lord, he is the master of everything in all material and spiritual world. And those temples where his deity is installed and worshipped by sincere devotees, he says that is a most sacred place. There are so many wonderful examples of how the Lord, in the form of a deity, reciprocates with his devotee, and ultimately the greatest reciprocation is when he bestows his kindness upon the fallen souls. Because in this material world, the great devotees have no business being here, save and except for the purpose of enlightening those who have forgotten Krishna, forgotten God. And the Lord himself, he has no business coming to this world, save and except to enlighten people in the science of how to find the relief of all miseries and awaken our original blissful consciousness. There is another temple in Vrindavan. It is called the Radharaman Temple. Just 2 days back, it was a very holy occasion. It was the day of the appearance of Sri Radharaman. And in that temple was a great devotee of the Lord of the name Gopal Bhatta Goswami. He was originally from the southern part of India, but he came to Vrindavan under the instruction of the Lord. So he had a group of Shalagram Shilas that he was worshipping. Do you know what is Shalagram Shila? They are little stones in which it is said in the scriptures that those particular stones from very, very special part of the Himalayas, the Kaligandaki River, that the Lord resides within those stones. And by worshipping them, you can worship the Lord. So one time, a wealthy person came and brought nice jewelry and crowns and cloths for the deities within Vrindavan. And he was thinking that, I wish I could offer my love to the Lord by giving this nice jewelry. But in this little Shalagram stone, I cannot decorate him. He is not in that type of form. So he was thinking this way on the appearance day of Lord Narasimhadev, Narasimha Chaturdasi. And he prayed to Shalagram, Krishna. He said that on this day, to fulfill the desire of your devotee Prahlad, in your beautiful, wonderful form of Lord Narasimhadev, you came out of a stone pillar. So I would like to worship your beautiful threefold bending form of Krishna. So I will be very happy if you could come out of this stone in your beautiful form, as you did for Prahlad. So the next morning he rose and he took his bath in Jamuna and he came back, and from one of the Shalagram Shila stones, the beautiful threefold bending form of Krishna playing his flute had come out. And this deity was very beautiful. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami came and brought all the devotees, the Goswamis of Vrindavan, to see. And because this took place in a very holy place where Krishna gives pleasure to Radharani, they named the deity Radharaman. And one day Gopal Bhatta Goswami, after worshipping Radharaman with great, great devotion, one day he began to lament, because Lord Chaitanya is the incarnation of Krishna in this age of Kali Yuga. Krishna Varnam Visa Krishnam Sangopanga Sriparashanam. The scripture says that those who have good intelligence in this age of Kali Yuga, they worship that beautiful, beautiful form of Krishna who appears with a golden complexion through the process of the congregational chanting of the holy names. And it was Lord Chaitanya that came and lived in Gopal Bhatta Goswami's house for 4 months and bestowed his great mercy and filled his heart with so much devotion. So he was thinking that I should be worshipping Lord Chaitanya. Even though Lord Chaitanya told me to worship Krishna, Lord Chaitanya also told me I should follow the instructions of my father. And my father told me to worship Lord Chaitanya. and it's Lord Chaitanya that rescued me. So he was thinking that how could I worship Krishna and not worship Lord Chaitanya? Even though they are the same person, how can I not worship the form of Lord Chaitanya? He is the most merciful savior in this age of Kali. So as he was thinking like this, he began to weep. And right before his eyes, the deity of Radharaman transformed into the beautiful golden form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he stood before him and bestowed his most merciful glance. And at that time, Gopal Bhatta Goswami simply fell at the feet of Lord Chaitanya and began to cry in ecstatic love, offering his great love and devotion. And then when he got up, Lord Chaitanya spoke to him. He said, "You should know that I am Radharaman. If you worship Radharaman, you are worshipping me. Can you see?" And then again he transformed into Radharaman deity. And for the rest of his life, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, without the slightest doubt, he worshipped Radharaman with his full heart and soul. So in this way, if we have that type of devotion, the deity in the temple is not a piece of stone, but it is the Lord, and he reciprocates with our love. After all, the Lord is everywhere. He is in and between every atom. One time someone challenged Srila Prabhupada, "Why are you all worshipping Krishna in this wooden, in this stone statue of the deity?" If he said, "Krishna is everywhere, why you have to come to the temple to worship him in this stone?" And Srila Prabhupada replied, "If Krishna is everywhere, then he's also in this stone in the temple. If he's everywhere, this is part of everywhere, so he's also here. But in this form, he is specially and personally revealing himself. We cannot see him everywhere. But we can see him. We could focus our consciousness in worshiping him in devotion here. And through the purification of our heart that comes through worship of the Lord, gradually we will be able to perceive his divine presence everywhere and in everyone's heart. Because he is the source of everything." So spiritual life is a great science. And it is revealed wherever the devotees of the Lord and wherever the deity of the Lord are manifesting themselves. That is the most auspicious place. Our dear godbrother, Sri Gauranga Sundar Prabhu, asked me to tell one story. Yes? I don't like to tell the story so much, but as his menial and humble servant, I am obliged. But it also has nice connection to what we are speaking today, of how wherever the Lord and his devotees are present, that is the best place. So, when I was a young boy, teenage years, I left home in search of God. I traveled through Europe and Middle East studying Islam, Christianity, Judaism. I came to India, told to the maximum possibility, you'll have the promise that you'll go to heaven in the end. Then you worship here. We are not against any religion. We are for every religion, whatever you call, whatever name your particular scripture may call for God, we offer all respect, providing that religion is teaching pure, unmotivated, unconditional, loving service to the Lord, not to make the Lord your order supplier. And this is very rare. And this is what we find in these wonderful temples of the Hare Krishna movement. Srila Prabhupada so strongly established the the supreme dharma. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masaja. To abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to the Supreme Lord. Surrender means let your will be done. I am your servant. I am the servant of your servants. I am living as an instrument in your hands to perform your mission in this world. I am not asking you, God, to help me in my mission. That is the difference between materialistic religion and true spirituality, real religion, where there is love for God. And certainly within our temples, there are many different people of different levels. Some still have some false egos. Some still have some sensual attachments. Some still fight and quarrel against each other because someone stole their sock. When I first came to Hare Krishna temple, I was thinking, these people are very simple. People in the world, they're fighting over countries and lands and businesses and proprietorship. Devotees were fighting over sock. This is my sock. No, no, you took my sock. It's my sock. I was thinking, anyways, if the whole world was fighting over socks, this would be a very peaceful place. But gradually, through chanting Hare Krishna and eating prasad and doing service, you become detached even from your sock. It's just a matter of purification. So it is true that within our temples, there are different people of different levels of consciousness, but everyone is trying to advance toward pure devotion. Detachment from our own selfish interests and attachment to Krishna's interest, to Krishna's service. And these temples are meant to be a center to rejuvenate people within the whole society. There may be a few people living in the temple, but there are millions of people living in the society. Srila Prabhupada wanted congregations to develop where all those people could come together in the temple to revive their spiritual convictions and bring that great treasure, that great wealth that they get in the association of Vaishnavas before the beautiful deity of the Lord, and bring it to their homes and bring it to their businesses and bring it to every part of their life. That is the purpose that these temples have. We do not want people to just come and live here. Some people live here. But we want people to come and to be spiritually charged, enlightened, to have direction. The temples of the Lord are meant to be like universities for spiritual consciousness, to educate people in how to live your life 24 hours a day in God's service. And you are so fortunate. Gauranga Sundar Prabhu, Jai Radhe Devi, and so many other nice devotees are sacrificing so much of their life to make this wonderful, wonderful facility available for all of you. So it is my very, very humble request that you kindly take advantage of this most blessed fortune that you have, the opportunity to associate with devotees and to learn the science of Krishna consciousness. And I am very, very grateful to all of you for so kindly helping to make this center a wonderful place for the upliftment of the consciousness of humanity, for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. Thank you very much. Establish a center in London. It was very important because London ruled India for over 100 years. And Srila Prabhupada, before he met his Guru Maharaj, he was following Gandhiji. And as a follower of Gandhiji, he was very much trying to defeat London. And when he came to his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, all this independence is all nonsense. He says, the only real independence is independence of the soul from material attachment. That isn't. Otherwise, with one political party, another political party, everyone is bound by illusion. But the propaganda in those days was that the sun never sets in London. Since I've been here, I haven't seen it rise yet. It's so cloudy and rainy and cold. Anyways, that's another story. But in this way, London was the most powerful place in the world. And therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, back in the 1930s, he sent two of his senior most sannyasis to London to start a center. And they did some nice preaching here. They tried. But it was very difficult to actually really... They made some goodwill, good connections, but to actually establish Krishna consciousness in the hearts of the people, they were not able to do. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati called those devotees back. And the devotees were thinking, it is impossible to spread Krishna consciousness in this place. So Srila Prabhupada knew how much this place of London was important to his spiritual master. And he went to New York, because at that time, this was 30 years after his Guru Maharaj left this world, he understood that New York was, at this time, the most influential city in the world. But still, London had utmost importance. So he chose three of his most important disciples and sent them to London to try to establish Krishna consciousness, something his senior most sannyasi godbrothers were not able to do. And one of those six people was Malati Devi. Mukunda Maharaj, and at that time he was married man, Mukunda, and his wife Janaki, who is Rukmini Priya Devi Dasi's beloved Guru Maharaj. Yes? Very well. And Guru Das. Guru Das is the person that took the halwa away from me. But he's also the one who brought me up to sit next to Prabhupada. And Jamuna, who you hear every morning singing Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, and Shyam Sundar, and Malati. So it was not easy for them. They came here, they didn't know anyone, they had no money, they had to go through all sorts of tricks just to get into the country without any money. In those days, England didn't want any people without money. Malati was telling me when she had a little baby too, a newborn infant child, she came to the... You know how much trouble it is taking care of a baby for a mother? And yet she was full-time preaching Krishna consciousness in a place without a home, without money, nothing. Sometimes she was living in the basements of warehouses in a cardboard box. Her bedroom was a cardboard box, her and her baby. For months at a time, this is the way they couldn't even live together. They were all scattered out in all different places, the six of them. But they were determined on Prabhupada's order to establish something in England. And by their efforts, we see what has taken place. Malati and Shyam Sundar were the first people who met the Beatles. They got their help. And gradually, Bhaktivedanta Manor, Berry Place, and Soho Street, and so many wonderful devotees, so many wonderful facilities. So we owe Malati a great debt, because she is the one of the people who sacrificed so much, worked so hard, just to give all of you Krishna consciousness on behalf of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So anyways, I don't want to speak too much, because we would like to give you the fortune of hearing Malati Devi speak for a few minutes. Thank you very much.
My current service is taking care of a small center in Columbus, Ohio, much like this, very small, very packed, very enthusiastic devotees and congregation. In 1967, January, I first physically met Srila Prabhupada and was initiated by him 1 week after meeting him. And by the end of 1967, the discussions for the English Yatra had begun. And in January of 68, it was confirmed that we would indeed be going to England. But since at that point in time I was actually pregnant, it was decided to wait until the child was born. Prabhupada said to wait, and then he said rest a little while and then go. So when the child was 6 weeks old, we departed for America to begin serving Srila Prabhupada in England. So we took our departure initially in Montreal, because that is where Srila Prabhupada was at that time. This was in August of 1968. And we arrived there in the middle of August, and we stayed approximately 1 week. And during that time, we had the good fortune of celebrating Janmashtami and Srila Prabhupada's appearance day prior to our departure in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. And the day we departed to go to New York to catch our plane, we asked if we could have a final darshan with Srila Prabhupada. And recently we had heard that if you touch the feet of a saintly person, particularly your spiritual master, that you would get all blessings and benedictions. And we felt that if we could somehow do this, that our mission would be successful. We had actually never seen anyone do this before. And so we asked his servant, Govinda Dasi, if she would ask Srila Prabhupada if we could touch his feet. And he very kindly consented. So the morning of our departure, with the cabs sitting out in front of Srila Prabhupada's house, with the engine still running, we went in to beg his mercy. And we, each one of us in turn, put our foreheads on his lotus feet, and he took his very soft, beautiful hand and put on the back of our head and rubbed or patted the back of each one of our head. And at that instant, each one of us had no doubt that somehow or other, no matter what would happen, that this mission would be successful. So factually, we were extremely naive. We had no books to bring with us, because there were not any books. The Macmillan Gita had just more or less been printed, or was being printed. We barely had anything except each one of us. We traveled fairly light, so each one of us more or less just had a suitcase. And I had suitcase in one hand and the child in the other. And we sent ahead of us, each one of us, a trunk with various household items in it, and not knowing that England was more or less like a little India, and we were worried about whether we could get certain things. We had one trunk with rice and dal and spices. And that was Janaki, because she was very practical. And Shamsundar packed a very large shipment of California redwood. And he insisted on sending this wood because he said it is most beautiful, and when we get a temple, he would build a temple room out of redwood. We were only devotees at that point. Mukunda was just hardly 2 years of devotee, and the rest of us, 1 year and 9 months, not even. And we didn't have any great knowledge. The only thing that we carried with us was a great desire to serve Srila Prabhupada's desire. And his desire was based upon the desire of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Some months earlier in San Francisco, when Srila Prabhupada had been very ill and he was going to return to India, we became very fearful, all of the young devotees. And we thought we may never see him again, because we thought he may leave his body, because he said, "Let me go back to India and die." And in our fear and anxiety, one devotee, Mukunda, asked Srila Prabhupada if perhaps he could send one of his godbrothers over to guide us, because we felt so inadequately educated. We felt we knew, we were just starting to know something. And if Srila Prabhupada, who was our teacher, was going to leave, who would teach us? So this question was asked to Srila Prabhupada. And he fell very silent. A gravity filled the air of the temple room. And each one of us became very silent, externally and internally, just intently staring at Srila Prabhupada's beautiful face. And we could see from his eye some tears forming. And then he answered in a faltering voice that my spiritual master was not an ordinary man. And from that answer, we could understand that our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, was not an ordinary man, that he was most extraordinary, and that no one could ever replace him. And this greatly increased our love for him and our desire to serve him in any way possible. And this mission to London seemed so important to Srila Prabhupada that it became the absolute most important thing in all of our lives. Whatever family life we had, which wasn't much, became zero. Whatever social life might have existed became zero. Whatever desires we had for any outside occupation became zero. And everything centered upon this trip to London. And when we reached London, it only increased. Maharaj was mentioning that our entry into London, we had to be a little sneaky because we actually had no money. We had just our tickets and just very, very little money. But at that time, to enter into the Great Britain was very difficult. You needed to show you had money because they were very much afraid of the hippies invading Britain. Of course, I think the hippies came from Britain originally, but they didn't want any more than they already had. So when a foreigner came to Britain, he had to show, "Look, I have money, lots of it." And then they said, "Okay." But we didn't have money. So we asked Srila Prabhupada when we were in Montreal, this was Shamsundar's idea, that can we borrow $1,500? And in that time, that was quite a very respectable amount of money. It was quite good. And it was arranged that we would take this money and show it at the border and then send it back to Srila Prabhupada. But of course, $1,500 for six people isn't so amazing. So the way we arranged it, we took a very cheap flight on Icelandic Airlines and we landed in Luxembourg, and then we took a train to Amsterdam. And then from there, two by two, we would take the train and the ferry into the UK. So the first two, myself and Shamsundar and Saraswati, 2.5, or if you use this kind of mathematics, half, half, and one would be two of us. Anyways, the ladies will understand that. So we came in. And another thing is we certainly didn't wear any saris or dhotis, because we didn't want to look like any strange cult invading the pristine UK. So we had gone to the Salvation Army secondhand shop, and we'd each picked out one very nice, ordinary-looking outfit. So we had on our very nice, ordinary-looking outfits. And when we came into the desk, what are you doing? And I had gone to the tourist office in America, and I had all these pamphlets about castles, and I said, well, we're going to visit all the castles in Britain. And he said, very nice, do you have any money? And I said, certainly. We showed our $1,500, and they were very happy. You can go in, no problem. And then we telegraphed the money back to Amsterdam, and Mukundan Janaki came in. And they telegraphed the money back to Amsterdam, and Gurudas and Jamuna came in. And then we sent the money back to Srila Prabhupada, and it got lost. And for 3 months, we were in complete anxiety about the loss of this money, because we were not allowed to work in the UK. So we thought, now we're already his debtors, but now we're really his debtors. But fortunately, after about 3 months, they recovered the money. So we were here without any names, addresses, introductions, or money. And initially, we met some person at Victoria Station, and this person said that he had a home in Herne Hill, and we could use this place for some small amount of money. So we initially lived in Herne Hill. But after that, you know, it was either free or almost free. But when you get something at a discount, it usually doesn't have a very long duration. So that had to come to an end. And after that, it was from one place to the other place to the other place. And we'd be scattered all about London. It wasn't like we'd all live together. So in order to remain mindful of our mission there, we would meet somehow or other, either daily or several times in the week in some meeting place and chant, and have some kind of program. Eventually, we started meeting some Indian families. And even though we were a great mystery to them, we were from the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but there was only six of us and a kid with no address, and we had white skin. But we were so enthusiastic to present Srila Prabhupada that they would kindly invite us to their homes and their little temples for programs. So practically speaking, 6 nights out of 7, we would travel from one place to the other all around London, and eventually we even came up to Leicester. And we would have programs, chanting, kirtan, Bhagavad Gita class, and then prasadam. And this went on until one day, and it seemed like forever. And it was hard not to become discouraged, because we knew how much Prabhupada wanted this, and if we would write him a letter, we would tell him some little thing, and he'd say, that's very nice, but have you got a building yet? So we were probably praying the most intense prayers of our lifetime during that period. And individually and collectively, we put any personal problems or considerations aside. And in this way, eventually Krishna assisted us, because Shamsundar had gone to the bank to see if there might be any money left. And while he was walking down the street, the bank was on Regent Street, I think, near Piccadilly, was walking down the street, and he bumped into a gentleman that used to be a tenant in our apartment building that we managed before coming to England. And, of course, now we were in England, so immediately speaking to each other, and he told him what we were doing, and the man said, oh, well, you know, I think I have a building you could use. And this building was Berry Place, and it had been a former Bible Society building where they had Bibles that were translated in many, many languages and then sent out around the world. So this was the beginning, the very early background of the London Yatra. And what time is your Aarti? Aarti is what time? Then when we got the building, of course, you couldn't live in it. It was uninhabitable, both by standards of the building code and just the layout, you know, having no shower facilities, no cooking facilities. So again, we were still scattered, staying out in John Lennon's place in Tittenhurst, coming in. But Prabhupada had arrived, finally, at our insistence. The minute he heard we had a building, ready or not, he wanted to come. So he came. And of course, on one hand, we were in anxiety. The thing that we wanted the most, which was to have a building and have Srila Prabhupada arrive, was happening, but it wasn't quite right because the building was uninhabitable. So it was arranged that Srila Prabhupada would also stay out at John Lennon's place, and the devotees would commute in, they would work there, a few would stay in there. And during that time, we set up these programs not Camden Town Hall, but what's the other one?
Conway.
Yeah, Conway Hall. And we would come in to Conway Hall from Ascot. Again, we only had one vehicle, so we would hire a vehicle for Srila Prabhupada. And during this time, I had a little glimpse into Srila Prabhupada's potency with his preaching, because even though we had no place, and even though we had only our own words for the past over 1 year, because of the enthusiasm for Srila Prabhupada, people came to this program. And the hall would be packed each time. And the person who was driving Srila Prabhupada in, the hired car driver, every time he was the same driver. And this person one evening, it was an interesting encounter, that this particular evening in Conway Hall, Prabhupada gave a very classic, very basic, but very powerful, "You are not this body, you are spirit soul" lecture. And after this lecture, the second kirtan immediately gained tremendous momentum. There's actually a picture of this where you see Srila Prabhupada with his arms raised, and in the background is Vibhavati and Jamuna Prabhus. But the thing that was amazing that night was that Prabhupada suddenly rose up with his arms in air, and instantly everybody in the entire hall, without exception, was up. And we were looking at Srila Prabhupada because he was up off the ground. His feet weren't on the stage, and he was dancing, and his feet weren't touching the stage, and everybody in the hall saw this. It wasn't just the eyes of the devotees who love him. Everybody loved him that night. And everybody was chanting. And after the program, I went out to the car because I would go back each evening because I had to make his evening prasadam. So myself and my daughter, his servant Purushottam, and I would get in the car first, so when Prabhupada arrived, he wouldn't have to wait for us to get in the car. So we were already in the car, and Srila Prabhupada came out. The driver shut the door and he got in, and he turned to Srila Prabhupada and he said, "Well, you got a little out of control tonight, didn't you, Prabhupada?" And then he nudged him with his elbow. So we were in the back. We were like choking. I remember Purushottam said, "Oh my God, rebirth material." And we were just choking. But then, through that moment, we heard the driver say, "But it's really true. It's just like you say. It's just like this car. It's no good without a driver." And I realized that this simple taxi cab driver who had never shown any interest or inclination, he had actually received Prabhupada's message that night. And somehow or other, that just signified to me what a tremendous success. At that moment, I knew that this entire mission would somehow be successful by Srila Prabhupada's potency and his mercy. I think they have Aarti at 7:00, so should I say anything else?
Yeah.
Should I stop? Do you have anything else? Probably everybody's heard this story, but Srila Prabhupada, when he arrived at the airport, we had a very nice reception for him on his first arrival, and the question was asked, why have you come to the UK? And Srila Prabhupada very coolly answered, I have come to teach you what you have forgotten. Love of God. And that became our anthem. You know, whenever we wondered after that, what were we doing here? Why was Srila Prabhupada here? And so many wonderful devotees joined from that period of time when we had no real facility, when we had nothing to offer except Srila Prabhupada. And so we would tell everybody about Srila Prabhupada. We didn't have any of the books. We didn't have Back to Godhead magazines. But we had Srila Prabhupada. And so the first thing we would do would be speaking about Srila Prabhupada. And in that way, our preaching actually became successful. And one of the wonderful opportunities of this centennial year is, again, that opportunity is there at hand to remind everyone about the glories and the wonders of Srila Prabhupada. And that I've been able to instruct the young devotees from my ashram, whether or not they're on book distribution, but especially on book distribution, that your opening line is, do you know who is Srila Prabhupada? To whoever they meet. And whether they say yes or no, you have an opportunity to glorify Srila Prabhupada. And even a person who's atheistic, or even may even think that they're antagonistic, their heart melts to hear about what a wonderful personality as Srila Prabhupada and the wonderful things he has done for humanity, particularly those of us who count ourselves among the most fallen. One of the greatest things I think that Srila Prabhupada is allowing us to do for him in this year is not so much the seemingly external things that we are selling the kaloshes and we are doing these kind of things, having programs, but it's among ourselves as God brothers and God sisters, as grand disciples, as family and friends of Krishna, to come together and remind each other of Srila Prabhupada's glories. Not only that we should remind the person on the street, but to remind each other and remind ourselves just exactly how much Srila Prabhupada has done for us and how our lives have changed irrevocably because of the presence of Srila Prabhupada. And it seems to me that the most wonderful gift to Srila Prabhupada on this auspicious year of his centennial would be the gift of reuniting his family of devotees, but within the family to become loving and respectful of each other again, and to reopen forgotten friendships, and to once again have that overwhelming feeling of family that flooded our hearts in the beginning of this movement. Because it is still there, and it is still the most precious and wonderful thing that Srila Prabhupada has left us with. The books, even though it is said they'll last 10,000 years, and that seems to be a very long time, more than that 10,000 years is the love that Srila Prabhupada gave us, and that will go on for eternity. So it is our absolute duty to distribute that love, not only to the outsider, but even more importantly, to those around us, to our family and friends within ISKCON. And in that way, this ISKCON society will definitely flood the world with Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So I want to thank you very much for this wonderful center you have established on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. and invite any of you, should you come to America, to please visit New Vrindavan and Columbus, Ohio, where I am serving. They are very close together. And be our guest there and allow us to serve you also. Thank you very much.